It's Nick Costos and Ken Barkley on You Better You Bet from BetQL.
Hey, that's right. Last week you were telling me, or 2 weeks ago, it was Nick telling me that they might be saying stovetop in this song.
Might be, or definitely saying it. It's possible. Right?
It's a weird thing to write.
Stuffing techno song from back in the day. Yeah.
Oh my God, I love
Bill's asking. Bill's asking if I was doing the hustle. Bill, I promise whatever I was doing during that, because the best part is the producers can see me off camera when we come back, and when they play stovetop, I just start jamming out basically. And Bill always like has both eyes firmly affixed to my screen when stovetop comes on, because he knows I'm about to break out some atrocious dancing moves.
It really looked like you threw out a disco point there.
Instead of like this, it was stovetop, like I was doing like almost just two fingers up at the same time. I don't know why I did that. I also have no rhythm whatsoever and would never be confused with someone who does.
Does anybody actually know, like anybody on this show, what the hustle looks like? You know, do the hustle. What does it look like?
I don't know. Probably something disco-y, right? Like finger pointing and...
Yeah. Is that all they did back then in the 70s?
Cocaine, basically, and didn't, things, right?
So, and nobody shaved, yeah.
Right? Yeah, those two things, yeah. So, yeah. Love experimentation.
I said this, and I'm sure it's not stovetop. I was told this.
Don't stop, apparently. By the way, because we
oh, yeah, that makes sense. Don't stop. Yeah. Well, yeah, because when you start dancing, you don't ever want to stop.
Right. But like, why did he feel, why did the person feel the need to say that, or whoever mixed it? Like, if you continue playing the song, then it's not going, you have the control over it as the person creating the song. Like, who are you talking to? Yeah.
It's added incentive to not stop.
Right. Right. Just in case even you were just, it's thought crime. Even if you were remotely thinking of it.
Contemplating stopping.
Don't stop.
And now you're not going to stop.
Right. Just absolutely incredible. So I just, the other thing is, there was just a classic, like, bad radio segue where it's just like, it's like, and we're not going to stop talking about college football coming up next on the show. I just, anytime those things are in play, I just find them hilarious. So.
That's right. There is nothing that says dancing like college football.
Yeah.
And I'm told that Eli worked on something very hard and he loves this. And I don't want him to be deprived of it not playing right now. So, let's hear it.
Attention, class is now in session with Professor Lockerson.
If any of these teams actually won the title, just from the metric of talent score, maybe that's how we can catch one of these teams. Maybe that could come out of nowhere to a certain
extent. Like a Pokemon.
And win.
I like it.
Much like with Pokemon, in this case, if you're betting college football futures, gotta catch them all.
He's here to help get you set for the college football season.
Math is a really cool thing. Math.
From title odds to win totals and more, we've got college football covered on You Better You Bet from BetQL.
I love Eli.
Yes.
I love Eli. And I love that intro.
Do you love it?
Yeah.
Do you love it? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
It's got a lot going for it.
Uh-huh.
We did this whole thing on the show on Friday too, but it's just, it's
okay.
Like it's like a minute and a half long, and I just love that it ends with like a very generic NFL or college football sound effect after we went through this whole classroom motif and we had all these voices and everything. Just like,
isn't it really great though? Like those, I don't think those, the college football sound effects that, or football sound effects that every radio station uses, they should never die. Like that specific one,
that's in like ESPN radio promos for sure, for like game day and stuff. I mean, you literally, that has withstood the test of time. I mean, that was probably back, you know, before any kind of concussion protocols or any of that stuff going on. We just had, give me all those Nats, all those NFL films, all that natural sound. It was awesome.
So. Ken Barkley is brilliant. I told him that last time we worked together, and he is
football brilliant.
He is football brilliant. So we're going to spend a little over an hour now talking about college football, the upcoming season, and the SEC, which happens to be just a fascinating conference because they're going to continue it at some point to get bigger and bigger, and they're going to envelop every team in college football, and there will be no conferences. It'll just, everything will be SEC at some point. But here we go. The conference winner, Alabama, duh, at minus 162 to win the whole thing. Georgia is at plus 175. Texas A&M, a massive drop off then at 14 to 1. And so here we go. These are the odds to win this conference. Ken, what do you got?
Yeah, so I think the exercise we're going to do that'll make the most sense is all, and we're going to do this every single day this week. So Chris, set your watch to, you know, we can just like kick back a little bit during the next hour for Monday to Friday, this entire week, this window, probably around now, 5 to 6 or 4 to 5. We'll do one power conference, of which there are five, every day this entire week. And the idea is just really get all of my content out there. It's August, like don't need to drag our feet anymore. We're going to start getting actual news and practices are going to start. And much like with NFL, like the equivalent of Carson Wentz getting hurt, like that's going to start happening in college football. So let's just get all the opinions, all the content, all the projections out there. And then we can just start doing current events. We can do news every single day now that we're all on the same page, at least about what I think about everything, which apparently is important to some, and is definitely very important to me. And I'm the one who gets to host. So I guess I get to make that final call. The easiest thing to do it is we're going to do a win total analysis for every team in the conference. So this year for the SEC, 14 teams, we will. I'm going to go in alphabetical order only because that's how the tabs on my spreadsheet are organized outside of the big picture stuff. It's easier for me. I don't want to go from highest win total to lowest because it doesn't matter what order we do it. We're going to do it alphabetically. It also means I get to start with Alabama, which is kind of cool. But before we do that, I'll just give kind of a brief conference overview. Chris, and if you want to give kind of just a thought about just the conference in general this year, and then we'll kind of go on with the teams over the rest of the hour. And my goal with each team, and you can, if you don't get this from the pod, you're allowed to press me on it or message me. If I didn't give you a recommendation for what I would do with the win total, pass or bet over or bet under, how confident I was in it, then challenge me on it. My goal for this entire hour is, with every single team in this conference, have I given you a recommendation one way or the other? I have bet a few win totals in this conference. I think I'm going to end up with five bets on win totals in this conference, which is more than I thought I would have. I may even have a sixth, but I'm actually waiting on a couple things. So that's kind of where I'm at. Big picture wise with the SEC, Chris, and then I'll kind of get your thought on just if you like, is it Alabama? Is it a team out of nowhere? Is it LSU? Is it A&M? Who is it? The SEC this year is really funny. When you look at, there's been so many coaching changes the last 2 years. When you look at kind of coaching tenure and hierarchy and how the conference all fits together, so many programs that are not Alabama and Georgia and LSU, because they won a national championship, are just like hitting the reset button yet again, basically. And it's happening over and over again. And it started happening to some teams where we didn't really maybe think it was going to happen. So Tennessee obviously gets rid of Pruitt. We didn't really see that one coming. Maybe you did, but it happened a little unexpectedly. Now Josh Heupel is there. Maybe you didn't think it was going to happen with Auburn. I think we thought it was going to happen eventually, but maybe not this exact in this exact situation where Mel Sonko is on to coach in the group of five and Brian Harsin is the new head coach. So you have 4 year-one coaches in the SEC this year, Vandy, Tennessee, Auburn and South Carolina all have new head coaches, and you have 4 head coaches in year 2. So the overall kind of just longevity of the SEC coach, as you would imagine, if you're not the uber elite, expectations are so high that all these teams are just hitting the reset button over and over again until it's something clicks, until they get it right, or until the guy they have leaves to go somewhere better. If you're not a very good SEC team, the quarterbacks this year are better than you would think, but it's not like the most amazing crop of SEC quarterbacks imaginable. The ones that'll stand out, obviously Bryce Young for Alabama and JT Daniels for Georgia. That's one of the reasons why those two are not just, you know, Heisman front runners, but why their teams are expected to be really good. A lot of questions about Miles Brennan and LSU, who I think has the potential to be pretty good this year. And then two kind of off the radar guys, not off the radar, but two guys lower down on the win total odds. Matt Corral from Ole Miss is a guy who I've actually bet to win the Heisman Trophy. It's the only person with a win total sub 9.5 or sub 10 that I've actually bet to win the Heisman, because I think the totals in the games that they played are going to be just so astronomical. They play Louisville in week 1. The total in that game right now is 79 in a couple places. The stat accumulation that can occur with this guy is like off the charts. So Corral would be one, and then Connor Bazelak from Missouri is actually kind of interesting too. So it's not the name quarterbacks. Emory Jones for Florida would be another. Bo Nix is somehow still around and on another head coach. So it's an interesting dynamic that creates the conference. Alabama, Georgia, LSU have had their coaches for a while. Jimbo's in year 4, and basically every single other team, with the exception of Kentucky, has hit the reset button recently. Year 1, year 2, let's try to catch those teams. Let's see how well we can do. Most of them probably won't do very well, and they'll be hitting the reset button again a couple years later and a couple years after that. So that's kind of how the conference sits right now. Alabama, Georgia, LSU, and A&M, and then everybody else. Chris, what any thoughts about, like, if you had to bet a team right now at some of the prices you mentioned to win the SEC, what would you do?
Yeah, I'm not betting Alabama, even though they're probably going to win the thing, and they always seem to. Georgia at plus 175 is attractive to me because of the and it's not a great price, but it's still at least right. plus money. Their quarterback, a lot of people think, and obviously I have not seen a ton of him, but a lot of people think he's going to be really good and potentially the best in the SEC. And I guess we're going to find that out, obviously, when the season starts. But they do have a favorable schedule. Is their projected win total still, or they, it's like 10.5, right?
10.5 is correct. Yeah. And the good news is with the SEC, prices, obviously, like, people are going to be like, well, Clemson week one, to be like, well, obviously Clemson's not a conference game. So if you want to bet Georgia to win the conference, as opposed to betting them to make the playoff or to win the national championship, you make yourself immune to the Clemson game, except with regard to injury, I guess, would be the only other thing.
Yeah. So I'm really intrigued to see how that quarterback plays in the division. So, or within the conference, that to me is about the most attractive team. I don't know if there's anybody else that at this point I'd be willing to make a play on.
Sure. Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. We'll do a little bit of Alabama here. We have about a minute, and then we'll just pedal to the metal, just team, now that we've done the overview stuff for the rest of the hour. So Alabama's win total, and I'll give you my opinion after the break, I think. Their win total this year is 11.5. Nick Saban has been there absolutely forever. The overall metrics of this team are not that much different from any other Alabama team. Talent score, recruiting, returning production, it all looks exactly the same. Quarterback's the only thing that really looks different, to be honest. We're changing coordinators, we're doing all this stuff. Bill O'Brien comes in, but it all kind of looks the same. Interesting thing, and we'll talk about this after the break, Nick Saban Alabama teams, this might feel like business as usual, are generally not win totaled at 11.5. SEC is generally viewed as competitive enough that the likelihood they drop a game or two is higher than this. This schedule, for whatever reason, is not being viewed that way, and I think that's really interesting. And when we come back after the break, I think it's the idea of, is that really true, or is 11.5 somehow too high for Alabama? And it's a number that they really honestly have only had attached to a Saban team, I think, once in his entire coaching career, maybe twice, that the win total has been this high. Is that warranted? Is that deserved?
Yeah, we'll finish that thought, then we'll get to the rest of that and the rest of the SEC over the next hour here. Ken Barkley, Chris Ranji with you. The college football discussion continues after this on You Better You Bet on BetQL.
It's time for You Better You Bet with Nick Costos and Ken Barkley. They bring you the betting insight, laughs, and some rants along the way.
Finally, former Steeler defensive coordinator Bud Carson died today at the age of 75. Carson was the architect of the Iron Curtain. Steel Curtain, rather.
We'll give you an edge to beat the spread and so much more.
Write down the numbers, use everyone's ratings, average them, figure out what everyone thinks the spread would be. We're all kind of on the same page about what these spreads are. It would be alarming to people to figure out when we get to that game, even if there's no injury, how much different numbers can change.
What do we call that? Wagertainment. It's You Better You Bet from BetQL.
That was, that was so much better. That now that I knew to expect it, it was actually much better.
Yeah, you know, hey, that said, that I'm here for the Cold War stuff, you know. That's what that is. Ken Barkley, Chris Ranji on You Better You Bet. We are halfway home, but we are just getting started with our college football / SEC talk. And Ken, we wanted to go through all of these teams here and to not hurt anybody's feelings. We're not going to go best to worst. We're going to go alphabetical order here. Probably the best way to do it. We did start things off by talking a little bit about Alabama. I know you wanted to sort of finish up on them. So if you're looking for a college football breakdown as we're getting ready for the season, which really isn't too far away, folks. I mean, we're getting up to it. This is the best place to be right now, and Ken is breaking it down for us. So you wanted some thoughts still, or you had some thoughts still on Alabama.
Yeah, and I think the idea is basically, all right, 11.5 is their win total. That's not a number we usually see, even with a Saban Alabama team. Is that justified? With each team, I'll do a mini schedule breakdown, not to the degree that I think a lot of people will, but we put games in two categories. This is similar to one of the lessons from a couple weeks ago, likely wins and likely losses. How much volatility is there in the schedule? How many extreme outcomes are possible? Are there a lot of toss-ups? There are some teams that play like 8-9 games that could be, you know, 7-10 points in terms of the spread one way or the other, where we really honestly have no idea what the result of those games is going to be. Alabama is not one of those teams, and that will not surprise anybody. My numbers have them favored by more than a touchdown in all 12 games, favored by more than 10 in all 12 games, actually, in the look-ahead markets. the closest things to an upset that Alabama could see would be at Texas A&M, where they're a 10.5 point favorite in the look-aheads, 13.5 at Florida, and then the opener against Miami, who I think is non-threatening, I guess would be the right word to use. I think, you know, LSU has the chance to outperform their rating enough to make this like kind of interesting, where you have maybe three potential upsets, the at A&M, the at Florida, and the LSU game. But honestly, I actually think 11.5 is like the perfect number for Alabama. My recommendation would be to pass this number. If we could get a price variation to the degree that you could ever get under 11.5 at plus money, which I think is very unlikely, because 11.5 just is a little jarring, honestly, next to an SEC team. I don't think we're ever going to see that. If you could get plus 105 on an under 11.5, I have it almost like exactly 50-50 that they win 12 or less than 12. Your outcomes with Alabama are really simple. They're going to win 12 games a lot. They're going to win 11 games sometimes, and they're going to win 10 games a really small amount of time. And that's like basically it. So not a very fun win total to bet into, plus money if you could find it on under 11.5, but a pass on this one.
All right, so let's move on to Arkansas. This is not projected to be a very good team this year and is not going to. Their schedule, in particular, that first half of the schedule is going to be really difficult for them. Their win total, 5.5 right now?
Yep, so it's 5.5 juiced way over, or 6 has actually started appearing in a few places, which I find very interesting. The half is going to matter a lot with some of these, and I'll explain exactly what you want to look for to bet. If you can find 6 with the under juiced minus 130 or less, that's a bet on the under for Arkansas for me this year. Same kind of schedule breakdown. Basically, you have a 5-game subset to determine whether Arkansas goes over or under their win total for this year. They're, don't think about this chronological order. Think about this. How many go in the win bucket almost automatically, like 14 or more? How many go in the loss bucket almost automatically? Arkansas is basically going to be 3-4 with 5 games to determine what they need. So likely wins, likely losses, they're 3-4. You have 5 games left, and they have to win 3 of them to push this number. Here are the 5 games that will determine whether Arkansas goes over this year. They play Texas in a really interesting game in week 2, renewing a rivalry there. So Texas at Ole Miss versus Auburn, versus Mississippi State, and versus Missouri. And this is where sort of the art and science end up meshing, where those 5 games are all kind of rated as toss-ups right now, touchdown one way or the other. I like a lot of those teams even more than the market does. And so you're giving me, okay, I need, you know, 3 wins to push, 4 to hit the over, once we count the likely wins and losses. And I like a lot of those teams anywhere, where I actually don't think Arkansas will put up a very good record in those toss-up games. And they need a lot just to hit the number. It's worth noting, like, there's some things to like, right? Coach in year 2, everyone likes Pittman. He's like a funny, like good sound effect, like good sound bites. They won a couple games last year. They went 3-7. You would have thought they won like 9 games based on how they were treated, but they went 3-7 last year. Oh, coach year 2, like some talent coming back. Honestly, this profile for Arkansas from a recruiting standpoint is actually about the worst that it's been in about 10, 11 years since Petrino was there. It might seem like they're so much better. I just honestly don't really think that's true. The schedule's brutal. Even when you consider the toss-ups are against teams that I like much, much more than Arkansas, that I have higher rated, I think, than the market does. So under, if you can find a 6, you even can pay for the juice. You want the 6, you don't want 5.5 under on Arkansas.
All right, let's move on to Auburn. Tank Bigsby and the Auburn Tigers, win total projected for them at 7.
Yeah, this is another bet for me, actually, and it's an under bet on 7. So when we break things down into likely wins and likely losses, so that's point spreads of 7.5 or greater each way, like not even close to toss-ups entering the season, we end up with Auburn rather 4-4 with 4 toss-up games left. So just think about it that way, right? Win total 7, 4 very likely wins, 4 very likely losses. You have these toss-up categories. Okay, like they literally have to win all of these to hit this number, unless my rating for Auburn is way, way off. And I really don't think it is. The toss-up games are at LSU, which I only have rated as a toss-up because the market does. And I honestly believe LSU will be favored by a touchdown when we get there, but they're not. It's basically rated like a pick right now. At LSU, at Arkansas, versus Ole Miss, and versus Mississippi State. I have 3 of these teams rated, well, Mississippi State rated slightly better than Auburn this year. I also think Brian Harsin is the new head coach is honestly like a monster red flag, where it is possible that he can keep this thing on the rails. Malzahn played such a unique system and did things so uniquely that it's tough for, I think, somebody to pick up the pieces with the players that are there. Yes, they recruited a very high level. Yes, Bo Nix is a returning quarterback, but I honestly just have so many questions with the team, and a number of seven just gives them very little wiggle room because they do have a lot of auto losses on the schedule where, like, it would be very surprising if they won a bunch of games on their schedule this year. Doug Kazarian advocated for this under last week. I agree with him completely. Has to be seven to bet it. I would pay a pretty good amount to get the seven. I'd pay like minus 150 to not have to go down to 6.5. I would bet the under on Auburn.
All right, so Florida supposed to have a pretty good offense this year. At least a lot of people think they're going to. They do have Alabama on the schedule. I believe that's going to be in Gainesville. However, the Florida Gators are 18-1 to win the conference. What are your thoughts on the University of Florida?
You would think replacing Trask and replacing some other NFL caliber players that this would be like a fun win total to break down, honestly. This is one of the most like boring win total conversations imaginable. So if you go by likely wins and likely losses, so first of all, Florida is going to be favored by more than two touchdowns in six of their 12 games this year. I mean, it just, the extreme outcomes are non-existent with this team. I mean, they just won't ever happen. Like, it's just fake games for like half the year, basically. If you just go likely wins and losses, so spreads of seven or more each way using my numbers, Florida's 8-2 with two games left, basically, to determine whether they will go over this number. Again, the number is nine. The true toss-ups are at Kentucky, where I think they'll be a small favorite, and they play LSU on October 16th. Like, that's it. Like, there's just such little wiggle room here. Even if you don't like Emory Jones replacing Trask, even if for whatever reason you think they've lost more than they normally have, that's true, although maybe not to the degree that I would bet under on them. Dan Mullen also has like this crazy habit of going over on his win total no matter where he goes, literally every single year. Went over in his first two seasons as head coach of Florida, went over every single year at Mississippi State except the year after Dak Prescott went to the NFL when he basically had nothing back. So like, when I have some under indicators for a team, the coach is like a dead over coach, the games have very little volatility to them, and the numbers like right about where I would make it, it honestly just makes it like a monster pass, even though like I think you can, people will make cases for this over and this under because it's easy to find the statistics to do so. I just think this number is like a very well set number. I don't want to bet into it at all. Dan Mullen scares me to death if I ever want to bet an under on him. And I just don't see a lot of toss up games that can create kind of some crazy outcomes. So I think at nine, you pass the total.
All right. So I you mentioned this earlier. I mentioned this team, Georgia, as the one that I like to win the division if it's not going to be Alabama. And I know that's, look, it's not going out on a limb or anything. They are a plus 175 to win the SEC this year. But again, it's based a lot on the quarterback they have that a lot of people think is going to be really good and potentially the best quarterback in the conference. So here they are. You did mention that game against Clemson. They're going to start the season against Clemson. And I guess if you're going to have that game, maybe the first week of the season is the best time to do that. So what are your thoughts on the Georgia Bulldogs?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting discussion. If you like the over on this team at 10.5, is it more to your benefit to bet them at a pretty good plus price on the money line when it opens against Clemson, or to play over here with the idea that like, okay, well, if they lose the Clemson game, like they literally have to win out 11 in a row in order to hit this number. Like, would you rather the return from like a plus 130 or a plus 140, you know, 40 on the money line, whatever it ends up being against Clemson? That was kind of how I went into it. So I was never going to bet this because I was like, if I like Georgia, I'm going to bet them against Clemson. I'm going to get my money. Then I don't have to worry about canceled games. I don't have to worry about COVID. Like, I just get my money when they beat Clemson. If I really like them, that's like a much, like, honestly safer, which is a weird word to use given all the stuff we're talking about, way to get it, because you're going to get the money when the game's over. You don't have to wait for, you know, postponements and forfeits and all this stuff to see if you actually get paid. As the number has started coming down in this, the look ahead for Clemson, then like there needs to be like a reciprocal effect on Georgia's win total, right? If they're going to get more and more and more likely to beat Clemson, then they really need to get more and more likely to go over their win total. And that hasn't really happened. We haven't seen that catch up yet, where Georgia's over 10.5 should actually start getting juiced more because the Clemson game is such a true toss up. If you lose 10% out of that win probability, then that actually should increase the 10.5 a great deal. So I have not bet this yet, but I think it is very likely soon that I'm going to bet Georgia over 10.5. I just haven't done it like right now. I'm very likely to do it in the next couple of days. So that's the one I haven't done yet. But as the markets have started shifting, I'm like, I think I actually need to get in on this now, because now it's seeming more and more likely that Georgia Clemson goes off as less than a field goal each way, which is like pretty crazy. Not something that I expected necessarily when the markets opened and Clemson was a 4.5 point favorite. So as that's kind of started compressing, I like Georgia's over a little bit more as a bet before the year, because that money line on them is probably not going to be very lucrative. So that's something that's changed for me in the last week. I was not expecting to bet this. Now I'm probably going to have a Georgia over ticket. The particulars on them, their win total is 10.5. In 11 of their 12 games, they are favored by more than a touchdown. I'll give you one guess what the other one is. It's Clemson week one. So again, another very similar to Florida, very similar to Alabama. The range of extreme outcomes here is almost zero. And this is true with almost all top level college football teams. Like, it's a ton of 11s. It's a ton of 10s. It's a couple 12s, and it's very, very, very rarely nines. Like, I mean, and like, that's it. Like, that's all it is. Like, JT Daniels gets hurt, it's a nine. Like, that's the extreme outcome. Like, quarterback injury. Oh no, they only went 9-3, rats. You know? So it's just, that makes betting some of these SEC win totals. It makes betting some elite college football program win totals, like, dumb, honestly, kind of, because you're not, like, you're not giving me any options here. Like, there's no wiggle room. It's just always going to be dead around the number and like slightly over, slightly under. That's not really the type of thing I like betting into. I'd rather bet into a 5.5 or a 6.5 where it's like, I think 2's in play. I think 11's in play. Just give me some more options and more games that fit into the toss-up category. And I think I can make a better decision that wins money. So with Georgia in this case, it's just really that it's 10.5 and not 11, that 11 wins. So just at the current prices right now, if you found minus 145 or better on over 10.5 for Georgia, that would be a bet that I'd be interested in making and one that I will have. Again, favored by more than a touchdown in 11 of 12. The only other one is Clemson. Kirby Smart, just for what it's worth in his career at Georgia prior to the COVID year, won 11 in three consecutive years, went over his win total in two of those years. So, you know, as safe as I think you can get with a number that's pretty high. I expect them to be awesome this year. I have no idea whether they will beat Clemson, but I hope they beat Clemson.
Let's see if we can get through one more before we hit the break here. I know we're up against it. Kentucky Wildcats, 5-6 last season.
Yeah, a team that is every year hilarious. Mark Stoops is the head coach, honestly, and it's one of the funniest relationships between a coach and a team because he's one of the longest tenured SEC head coaches, but by no means one of the most successful, right? So like Smart wins a million games. Saban, obviously one of the best, like the best coach of all time. Orgeron won a national championship. And it's like, oh, Stoops. Be like, what did he did? He wins like 7 a lot, you know, but the school's really happy with that. He has a lot of, imagine having stuff built into your contract where if you literally win like 6 games or 7 games, you get another year added onto the end of your contract by doing that. Like all you got to do is just be average. And you come on back like 2028, we'll have you back. So this, he's just made a living and he makes, you know, like obviously 7 figures every single season. Like what a job basically. Kentucky season, and I'll finish this in the next 60, has basically been defined by, they will always have an incredibly large amount of toss-up games. And Stoops has been incredible at winning those toss-up games to go over numbers. That's been like sort of the story of his coaching career. If it's a spread of a touchdown or less, heading into the season, those are games that he's typically picked up more than half of. That's what leads to a lot of 7s and a lot of 6s in terms of the amount of games that he wins. The win total this year is 7. I have them 4-1 with 7 toss-up games remaining to try to figure out. I would read them, but it's like a cavalcade of mid-tier SEC opponents. If he wins about half of those, they get to this number a lot. And this looks a lot like a normal Kentucky team from a talent standpoint. They're going to try to pass the ball more. I have no idea if it's going to work or not, but there's enough kind of mystery here. The number seems pretty properly set. My number seems really close to this. So 7 seems about right. And hopefully Stoops gets some more bonuses and more money in his contract. Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of teams to go here, a little bit more than half the conference. We're going to start things off with LSU. Ken Barkley is awesome at breaking down college football and how you should approach the season upcoming. So we're going to continue to talk with Ken in just a little bit here on You Better You Bet. Again, we'll start with the LSU Tigers as we break down the SEC, or Ken breaks down the SEC on You Better You Bet on BetQL.
It's You Better You Bet from BetQL. Download the BetQL app today to get the latest analytics to help you beat the sportsbooks. It's Nick Costos and Ken Barkley on You Better You Bet from BetQL.
It's actually Ken Barkley and Chris Ranji in for Nick Costos this week as we continue our college football discussion. Ken Barkley breaks down the SEC, dominating the SEC, telling you how to approach the upcoming season from a betting perspective. We left off at the LSU Tigers. We still got half the conference to go here, Ken. This is one of the best teams in the conference. They got a lot of starters coming back as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Win total 8.5 for LSU this year. I'll start by saying I think that's a number that I would not bet into necessarily. I do think LSU is eligible for some extreme outcomes. They have the number one talent score, combination of recruiting and returning production. They've had that twice since I've been doing it for about 15 years. One was Joe Burrow and the best team basically in college football history a couple of years ago. And the other time they had the best talent score, number one in talent score a few years before that, Brandon Harris, a North Carolina transfer, was their starting quarterback. All they did was lose as a touchdown favorite week one to Wisconsin and go on to be like 8-4 that season. I think Danny Etling actually ended up playing quarterback at the end of that year, if I remember correctly. So number one in talent score doesn't always mean amazing things. It can. And it just means the potential is there, basically. So I think this team can win the national title. I think they can win their division. I think they could beat Alabama. But I don't think any of those things are remotely locky, you know, great word choice there, or even probable. I just think they are possible, basically. And with most teams, honestly, they're not possible. So this is one where it's true. The problem is you have a ton of toss-up games that still come into play because of the extreme range of outcomes, right? Like LSU could be just a really talented, pretty good team, or they could literally be the best team in the country. When that's true, toss-up game is against Florida, against A&M, even at Kentucky, at UCLA in the opener when UCLA brings back everything. This brings just crazy. Like LSU could literally win 6 or 12 or all this year. I mean, it's just, there's very few teams in the country that have that pattern. I don't see a good reason to bet in the win total either way. I think they are a team where if you happen to really like them, if you like Miles Brennan, their quarterback, your study kind of or analysis yields that he might be like a really good quarterback this season. They would maybe be a team I would take a shot on, win the conference, win the national title, something like that, but not bet the win total.
Going to be some tough SEC teams up on the schedule here for this next team, and that is Mississippi State. They'll have Mike Leach as their head coach for the second year, so they're going to look for a little bit better from him. How do you see MSU?
One of those teams in the middle. Yeah, I think you mentioned it accurately. A team with a ton of toss-up games. One of the very few in the conference. There's only a couple. Kentucky is one. This is another. Likely wins and losses. I have them 3-2 with 7 remaining to try to determine if they're going to hit this number or not. You also have the idea that Leach, historically, now does this carry over to the SEC, but Big 12, Pac-12, this is a guy that went over his win total a lot, did it with less talent, did it with, you know, trying to just find a quarterback that fit his system more than anybody else. Just a different kind of dude. And that makes handicapping win totals with him difficult. It's a little bit like Dan Mullen, where it's just you get kind of freaked out betting an under on Mike Leach, especially when he's had a year at the program. My number for them is a little over 6, but pretty close. They have a ton of toss-up games. The profile of the teams they're playing is very, very, you know, kind of, you know, out, all over the place, basically. NC State and Memphis and Auburn and Ole Miss, like these are all teams that also have very volatile outcomes. So I think it's about the right number, and I don't feel great enough about the team going into year two to make a bet. So I think 6 is very appropriate. I would pass.
All right. What about Ole Miss?
Ole Miss is a team that I'm kind of willing to take a shot on this year. And I think part of that is based on the schedule. So likely wins, likely losses. Using my numbers, I actually make them 5-1 with 6 games left to determine whether they hit this number. The toss-ups I have for them, touchdown spread, spread of a touchdown or less, either way, 7 points are underdog, 7-point favorite. Arkansas at Tennessee, LSU at Auburn, A&M, and at Mississippi State. And kind of by my numbers, they literally only need to win half of those games to hit the over of 7.5. A lot of things I like about this team. Recruiting profile remains really good. Returning production versus the rest of the conference. Everybody brings back a lot. They bring back like a lot. And it's actually even more than a lot of the other teams in the SEC. They're one of the few teams that has a returning quarterback. They are very likely to be 3-0 with a week off going to Alabama. Matt Corral could have 18 touchdowns by then. He will be among the favorites to win the Heisman Trophy. If they even lose but score a lot in that game, I think his Heisman stock has the potential to take off the rest of the year, and I think they might win enough games to make it happen. 8 is not a number I'm interested in. I really want the 7.5. I only want to win half those toss-ups that are remaining. It's Lane Kiffin. He's probably going to blow a couple games, but I only want to win half the toss-ups. And Alabama is the only 14-plus dog on the schedule, so they're really going to be in a lot of games this year. Over 7.5 would pay a lot to make it happen, like minus 150 or more, or less, I should say.
All right, so the Missouri Tigers are a team that paid a lot of attention to during my last job in St. Louis, and everybody was really excited about Aliyah Drinkwitz, who became the coach. He apparently is a very popular player coach, and he'll be in his second season now. So what are your thoughts on Mizzou?
I stared at, so this is 7 right now, basically everywhere, Missouri's win total. I stared at 7.5 6 consecutive mornings, I think, when I woke up, and I looked and I was like, is today the day to bet under 7.5 on Missouri? I was like, nah, everyone seems to like Missouri. Like this number will still be there. Of course it will. Of course I shouldn't bet under 7.5 right now. And I'm an idiot. 7's a number that I don't really want to touch, and 7.5 I would have been pretty interested in. Yeah. I mean, year two of a coach that you at least have like some kind of confidence in, I think is kind of interesting. It's also worth noting, talent score wise, their number is much higher than the final year with Odom and the first year with Drinkwitz, versus the rest of the conference. They still don't recruit as well, obviously, because they're in the conference with all the heavy hitters, but their four-year recruiting average has gone up now, consecutive years, basically much better than last year. They bring back more. They have a quarterback that they kind of like in Bazelak. So it all kind of makes sense. My biggest problem was just likely wins, likely losses. They're 4-3 with five games left to determine whether they get over the number. And 3-2 pushes and 4-1 wins in that situation with games that I don't know what's going to happen in. It's just tough. Like, they really kind of have to run the table against, like, when you're looking at the schedule and you're like, all right, like, at BC, have to win, have to beat South Carolina, have to beat Tennessee. Like, when it's really like no margin for error in your toss-ups, that's always a team I'm going to kind of keep my eye on. Now, I thought everyone was going to like them enough that I was going to be able to get 7.5 a little bit later. I wasn't even really sure where the juice was necessarily going to go. They're a team I got wrong. I should have bet under 7.5. If you have access to it, I would bet it. If it comes back, I would bet it. 7, I'm much less interested in. I think 7 occurs a super high percentage of the time with this team, where I don't really want to bet over or under if it's a 7. 7.5 would like the under on. But yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be pretty good. It's just a sort of a, you know, it's a definition of degree. It's just 7.5 is a great bet and 7's a lukewarm bet.
I always get the feeling that team's just going to be kind of hanging around, you know, that's,
well, they overachieve all the time. I mean, like, Gary Pinkel's there, they're winning 10 games out of nowhere. The year they won 11 games, basically like one of the best years in school history. You know, their win total that year was 5.5. They won 11 games.
Good Lord.
So I think they just do that to people where you're like, well, one of these years, like, Missouri's just going to show up and get 6, like, just out of nowhere, because they've done it so many times before.
All right, South Carolina, they won 2 games last year. They went 2-8. Are they good enough, or can they be good enough to double their win total this year?
I don't think you can ever bet the over on this team. The win total is currently 4 in the market. I don't think you can ever bet over this number. And one of the reasons for that is I try to make a notation for teams that I think can drastically under or overperform my rating for them, and there aren't many. LSU would be one, and I think it more up than down, but like extreme outcomes. South Carolina has some extreme outcomes that are atrocious. Like, they have some like zeros in here because there just aren't that many. So to give you an idea, they're ranking nationally in talent score. So that's how good the players are at your program. So nationally, they're ranking the 5 years prior to this season. This is the Will Muschamp era, 25th, 8th, 21st, 17th, 12th. Really good players, right? Top 20 basically program in terms of talent. This year, 42nd. And you change coaches, and I don't like any of the quarterbacks. The biggest thing they have going for them is just automatic wins. I mean, they're going to be favored by a touchdown or more in 2 of their games. You get halfway there, you get Tennessee on the schedule, you get Kentucky, you get Missouri. Maybe, I guess, you know, if I had to bet the win total of 4, I would bet under. I think 4 hits a bunch. I would never bet over. It's just teams in this range tend to outperform a pretty good amount of the time. So like, feels like a little bit like a sucker bet to me to bet under on 4. If you had to bet it, I would bet under. I think 4 is a pretty good number.
All right. A team that was kind of a mess at times last year has a new head coach. It is year 1 for Josh Heupel. You mentioned him a couple of segments ago. How about the Tennessee Vols? Win total for them, it's 6, I believe. I don't know if it's changed or not, but it is at 6.
Yeah, 6. Right? I mean, you say, how about the Tennessee Vols? Like, how about a team that just like... was one of the great under bets in win total history over the last 2 head coaching regimes. Like, we always expect a lot, right? Or at least if you're a Tennessee fan, you expect a lot. That's why you keep changing coaches. And then it just never materializes. Even the Butch Jones years where they're expected to be really good, you only cap out at 8 wins when your win total was 10, when your win total was 8. So it's just never clicked ever for like forever, ever since like the 90s, since like the early 2000s. And this year's kind of the same. And you mentioned it, if you have a new coach and you have a new quarterback, and all of these things were basically unexpected. It's a transfer quarterback, and it's not a coaching change we were expecting right when the season ended. It kind of happened out of nowhere. Now, maybe they knew the recruiting violations were coming. Maybe this was all a little more in motion than I thought it was. It brings a ton of volatility, and it brings some negative volatility, honestly, that's just possible. Where, like, what if this doesn't fit together in time? Like, what if it just doesn't happen? And what if Heupel's really, like, not that great of a coach? I actually still think that's possible, even with some of the success he had at UCF. So, you know, I try to kind of keep an open mind with teams. Tennessee's also one of those teams where they have a lot of predetermined wins and losses because of how their schedule sets up. Like, think about it, if you're in the middle of the SEC and you play Alabama and Georgia, and then you play, like, Vandy and 2 FCS teams, like, what is... where's the romance, right? Like, what is left to be determined? It's like, oh, cool. So now, like, 2 weeks of the year, I have to care whether you win or not. And all the other weeks, it's predetermined and nothing matters. Tennessee's kind of like one of those teams. I have them 4-3, likely wins, likely losses, with five toss-ups left. And I think I'm even being a little generous here, but they play Pitt week two. That'll probably determine the win total to a large degree. South Carolina, Ole Miss, at Missouri, at Kentucky. Don't love them in a lot of those games. But again, like, new coach, new quarterback, tough to make a number on this team. Tough to figure out who's left on the team. A lot of guys enter the transfer portal. It just, rather than try to like really just take a step, you know, a shot in the dark, basically, I would just rather have more info about how I think the pieces are going to fit together. I think six is fine. You know, I really don't want to bet this one way or the other. I think some extreme outcomes downward are at least possible.
Well, you know what Tennessee needs? They need a future Pro Football Hall of Famer, a quarterback, right? And then, you know, that would totally change everything. All right, let's talk about a favorite Texas school. How about Texas A&M last year, a 9-1 team?
Yeah, and a 9.5 win total in the market, which is, you'd have to go back to 2013, the last time expectations were that high, even though they've recruited like gangbusters every single year. Whew, really high expectations when you don't trust the quarterbacks whatsoever. You lose Kellen Mond, who pulled some records because he just played every single game, basically. Can they replace him with someone really competent, borderline elite? We don't really know the answer to that. Is it Haynes King? Is it Calzada? Do you like either of those guys? I have no idea. They recruit really well. Their win total is really high. If you look at likely wins, likely losses, I'm supposed to bet the over on this team if that's true. Despite quarterback uncertainty, I have them 9-1 with two games left to determine whether they hit the win total. Those two toss-up games, spread of a touchdown either way, at Ole Miss and at LSU. So kind of with my numbers, they win either of those. They're 10 a lot of the time. But I just think the quarterback volatility makes this a pass for me, honestly. Like, hard to trust that my number is correct on the team, you know, despite kind of all the metrics that say there's just so much talent here, that there's just, you know, it's a coach that we trust. It's a recruiting ranking. It's averages that we trust. It's, you know, Spiller and it's defenders and it's everything's kind of looks like it's going to fit together, but quarterback volatility and the numbers already really high. Lean over, have not bet it yet. Don't think I'm going to bet the over, but that's kind of my thoughts on them.
It should be an outstanding defense again. They are 14-1 to win the SEC, which I know that we're sort of focusing on win totals here, but is there anything about them you like?
Well, here's the problem, right? Look ahead. They get Bama at their place and they're still a 10.5 dog. And that's before we know Bryce Young's awesome, by the way. If we find out he's awesome, that number's 17. Like, I mean, sorry. Like, it's just like there's a lot of room for Alabama to go up too, which I don't know if people totally get. Like, if Bryce Young's incredible, oh, by the way, he was a 5-star recruit, he's one of the best quarterback recruits in the history of the school. Like, if he's awesome, by the way, oh, by the way, the wide receivers that are replacing the guys you know are also almost just as good as the guys that you actually know. I mean, there's a lot of room for Alabama to just start. Think about previous spreads between these teams when they played, and Alabama and other really good teams. Like, do you ever see under 14? Do you ever see under 20 with some of these programs? So it's just tough to get behind A&M to win the conference when, like, that's true. And, like, you could argue, okay, well, their quarterback could be really good too. Sure, I just trust Alabama's quarterback recruits more, basically.
All right, so let's finish things off here in the SEC with Vanderbilt, a team that won zero. They won zero games last year. They do have a new head coach, however. And, will they have any wins? They're going to have at least a couple, right?
Right. Win total 3.5, so market's at least projecting wins. Like, I mean, this is it's almost like a public bet, I guess would be the right way to put it. I have under 3.5. I've bet under 3.5 on this team. That's my last bet in this conference. Likely wins, likely losses. I have them 2-9 with one game left. That game actually wouldn't matter if my numbers are correct. If they actually were 2-9, I would just win. At Colorado State is the closest thing to a toss-up where it's a 7-point spread or less one way or the other. You could argue home against Stanford is another one, but I think Stanford's like really sneaky, actually not terrible. COVID impacted the state of California way more than a lot of other states. I think Stanford actually might be a little better than people expect, even if they're not going to be very good. So if that doesn't move into the toss-up category, then like what does? And again, new coach, like kind of just like another rebuild with this team. Recruiting's a little better, but none of the numbers are enough to kind of bridge the gap, I think, where it's they're even, you know, hanging on to the bottom of this conference with Tennessee and South Carolina and some of the other teams. I mean, they're a 2-touchdown dog or more in half their games this year, basically. Just makes it really likely to win 4, honestly. And I don't think Colorado State and Stanford are the two games that are going to do it. So I like under a 3.5. 3, I'd probably pass.
All right, Ken Barkley, fantastic breakdown of the SEC. We're going to pick a Power 5 conference. We're going to do it every day for the rest of the week. That was fantastic. Thank you, Ken. And, you know, there's only one way to follow-up college football talk, it's with more college football talk. Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, he's awesome at covering that. He's going to join us next. I'm Chris Ranji in for Nick Kostos. This is You Better You Bet on BetQL.
How should you bet tonight's player props? The prop king, Nick Kostos, has your answers on You Better You Bet from BetQL. It's Nick Kostos and Ken Barkley on You Better You Bet from BetQL.
Ken Barkley and Chris Ranji this afternoon. I am Chris and I am in for Nick. He is out for the week. He gets to have some vacation, and what a time to pick vacation days and take those vacation days, because there is a lot going on today. Obviously, this is the day that the NBA has its free agency period starting. It began about 42 minutes ago, and there has been a lot that has trickled in. Well, I won't even say trickle. I mean, it's been a flood. There's been a lot that's happened over the last 42 minutes, but we just got word about 5 or 6 minutes ago that there is some significant college football news and will affect this upcoming season, Ken.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll attach this to the end of the pod. So if you're listening to the SEC pods, just understand we somehow managed to pick Monday to do the SEC win total projections. For about 70 minutes, Chris and I went through every single team and gave win total projections. Talked about every team, would I bet them over or under their win total. Market was very stable. Nothing was changing. And then about an hour after we finished and last segment of the show, about 20 minutes ago, it was announced by Coach Ed Orgeron that LSU projected starting quarterback Miles Brennan has suffered a significant arm injury and is most likely going to be out this entire season. I think it's almost a certainty that he'll be out this season. LSU is scheduled to start their training camp, I believe, on Thursday is when players report. So the timing of this is obviously terrible. No idea what happened. Just saw some quotes from Orgeron and that it did happen. And there's a couple things right off the bat that I was curious about. So for people who like don't follow the LSU quarterback room that closely, they were still going to have a quarterback competition in camp between Brennan and I believe Max Johnson is the name of the backup quarterback's name, guy who started a couple games to close last season, a little bit more mobile, huge recruit as welcome to playing quarterback at LSU. You're always a huge recruit basically. But it was kind of going to be, people thought it was going to be Brennan against UCLA. I think that was like the consensus opinion. I didn't know that Max Johnson was Brad Johnson's son, Tyler. Is that actually true? I'm usually pretty good at that stuff.
I remember them talked about it last year and I just Googled
got it.
It's true.
That's bad job by me, only because during the COVID year last year, I like watched very little live college football on Saturday. I would watch it like after the fact. So probably skipped over the anecdotes in the last two games about Max Johnson, but it's not like it's nobody. It's not like, for example, if Bryce Young got hurt this year, or especially if DJ Uiagalelei got hurt for Clemson, that would be like, you got to take down every market. Everything changes.
Right.
Like is Clemson even, like how many games move into the toss-up category now based on who was going to start a quarterback? That's not this. It was basically going to be two guys for one spot. They have a talented freshman, Nussmeier, who probably wasn't going to play this year, who will now be the backup. But really, like, they're actually in pretty good hands, given that this is like a freak injury and we don't really know what happened, probably in better hands than most. So first thought is, all right, what is the quarterback situation like? I honestly haven't thought about my rating very much, if I'm going to change a whole lot of stuff. We'll see what happens to some of the look-ahead markets with LSU. I'm just kind of curious to see what the number reopens at. I wasn't going to bet the UCLA game at 4.5 in all likelihood. I was just, LSU was going to be a wait-and-see team for me anyway. We talked about them having volatile outcomes, extreme outcomes. Well, guess who just got more volatile and more extreme? The quarterback who maybe wasn't even going to start. So that's kind of interesting. Next question I had was, this has been the busiest, most active transfer portal season that we've ever had in the history of college sports. I think there were three times as many kids in the transfer portal this year as last year, even. And last year, we started having a lot of that. LSU, because all of their roster spots are filled and camp starts on Thursday and we're past some kind of deadline, LSU actually can't use the transfer portal to add a quarterback. So they can't go get somebody from some other school that's unhappy or a backup or maybe not going to win their starting job. Can't do that for this year. So it's going to be the guys in the quarterback room. It's going to be Max Johnson.
What about Nick Foles?
It starts against UCLA. Nick Foles had great things to say about Ed Orgeron. I think he just called another press conference right now after he was done gushing to Frank Reich about how he should trade for him. So, you know, the good news is I think this is going to hang out. This clip is going to hang out at the end of the SEC pod. We weren't going to bet LSU's win total anyway. I think their rating was extremely volatile to begin with. You may not even see a huge drop-off spread win total projection because it was a two-way quarterback competition anyway with two high recruits who both played last year. Like, Brennan only played three games last year, I think, and then he got injured. So it's not like this massive seismic thing. probably, but it's enough uncertainty. I think week one got pulled off the board in a bunch of places because I think Brennan was projected to start. So my update is basically I'm still not playing the LSU win total because we can't bet it anywhere. Even if it was similar, I wouldn't still have a very strong opinion one way or the other. We'll have to kind of see how camp goes, consume more information about what was going to, you know, talk to some people who maybe know what's going on there and then make a valuable decision. So I don't think anything is strongly altered by this. All the win total bets I gave out in the first hour are still valid. You know, I'm not even sure LSU's rating changes a ton as a result of this. They probably become a different team, honestly. Maybe they do a little bit more cubic, you know, quarterback run than they would have done with Brennan. So you lose, but you gain. And it was never for sure that Brennan was going to start week one against UCLA. So that's kind of where we're at. Just even more uncertainty with a team that we already thought was uncertain. So just had to kind of put that in there, Chris, with the idea that didn't see that one coming. Glad we did the SEC today, I guess. Glad we did that. You know, we could just kind of attach this on the end and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, this is I can't see it affecting the future as much. I mean, that market is still up. I mean, it's on the board.
Right. Well, they were so unlikely to win conference too. Yeah. I mean, they were just like, what were they going to be? Like, you know, they were 60, now they're 100, or they were, you know, 16 to win the SEC, now they're 20. Like, it's just the amount of probability they were occupying anyway was so small. It just it's not going to change a whole lot.
Does suck for the kid though. I mean, that's
oh yeah. I mean, if you're a fan of the team, like I would rather have like I liked Brennan as a quarterback prospect a good amount. Like, yeah. I'm not like the film guy, but, you know, if you like a team or you bet on a team already this season, LSU is like a kind of a semi-popular dark horse team. Like, even just forget the fact that if you like Brennan more than Max Johnson, like, you just want as many options as possible. Like, you know, we saw Trevor Lawrence get hurt a couple of years ago. Chase Bryce had to come in and narrowly beat Syracuse in a game that almost kind of toppled everything. We've seen it happen a bunch of times. So you just, if you're a fan of a team, if you bet on a team, you want them to have all available quarterbacks imaginable now that we're getting to the point where players are going to report to camp this week.
And we don't have exact specifics what the injury is. It is an arm injury, and they called it severe. And obviously, it's severe if you're going to get surgery.
Like broken a couple different bones. Like, it just, I mean, who knows? Honestly, who knows? I mean, but the point is just from a betting standpoint, if you're looking and you see stuff's off the board involving the SEC, especially with LSU and their week one game against UCLA, that's why. I'm not sure how significant of an adjustment will be. Probably not that significant, but, you know, we can't, I mean, it would just be speculation right now, basically.